And it is a grand prize giveaway Thursday as we are here at Drake's. It's on Morrell Road. It's right across from Westtown Mall. And, Jimmy, today we still have some last-second qualifying for the Bud Light New Year's in Nashville contest, but we give away the grand prize tonight.
That's correct. And we're going to take qualifying up till 5 o'clock. So you've got 2 hours to come by and register. We will draw the two qualifiers, and then you got a chance to win a phenomenal prize that takes you to New Year's in Nashville. New Year's Eve, you get to go see a concert at the Ryman's. The next day, you got the Predators, and on January the 2nd, you got the Titans playing the Dolphins. So how about that for a fantastic weekend and $750 spending money?
That's right. You can stay where you want, eat what you want, and just enjoy the heck out of transitioning from 2021 to 2022 in Nashville. But we have a lot in store today. There'll be plenty to discuss with Brent Hubbs of AllQuest.com as he'll be along for his weekly visit in hour number 3 of the show. Today is the day for slap shots with Mike Murray, president and GM of the Ice Bears. He'll join us at 4:35. So much to discuss in regards to what the Volunteers have going as they get ready to hit the road for a week. They'll be in Colorado on Saturday and then wind their way back, go up to the Northeast, play in Madison Square Garden against Texas Tech before coming home. So they'll be on the road for about a week or so. And then the Lady Vols last night, very impressive as they were able to pull away from Tennessee Tech and post a very, very solid win as they remain undefeated on the season. And, Jimmy, can't wait to hear the vantage point and perspective of VFL Austin Pope as he joins us to start hour number 2 of today's show.
Yeah, we look forward to him joining us. It was unfortunate that he entered the portal, but then when he saw who Tennessee hired, he thought, I'm going to come back, I'm going to play for Josh Heupel, and I want to prove that I could be a pass-catching tight end as well, not just a blocker. He was a pass catcher in high school. And then with continued back injuries, he was unable to play this year. So we want to get his perspective, what he thought. Did he watch the games in person on TV? Did he talk with the tight ends? What was his involvement? Just thought it would be interesting to hear his take on a Knoxville young man who was unable to play this past season.
So we'll have all of that and so much more today on Sports Talk, again at Drake's, where you can register until 5. We'll have final qualifiers, and then everybody starts checking in between 5 and 6. And at 6 o'clock, we start the grand prize giveaway in the Bud Light New Year's in Nashville contest.
Yes, we do. We'll get to our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters, technology you need, people that you can trust. Tennessee senior cornerback Alante Taylor is declared for the NFL draft and will not play in the bowl game. He said he has battled injuries the last 2 games, and so he wants to get prepared for the Senior Bowl to improve his stock. I can't blame him for that. He does need to get well, and his future in the NFL could depend on what he does at the Senior Bowl and how he is physically. This season had 60 tackles, 2 interceptions, including a pick 6 against Kentucky, 6 passes broken up. He also is rated the number 12 cornerback prospect in the country by Mel Kiper. As we all know, Mel Kiper's ratings can change dramatically, but that's where he's got Taylor right now. 41 games in his career, 161 tackles, 5 tackles for loss, 15 passes broken up, 4 interceptions, 3 forced fumbles. And he's a guy that came in, he was at wide receiver. Jeremy Pruitt moved him to cornerback, and has had a nice career at Tennessee. So he's declared for the NFL draft. Jordan Horston and Tamari Key and Alexis Dye helped lead Tennessee to that 76-48 victory last night. The Lady Vols stay undefeated. They're ranked as high as number 10 in the country. Alexis Dye, the transfer, 20 points, 10 of 15 on field goals. She had 9 rebounds. Tamari Key, 11 points, 11 rebounds, 3 assists, 4 blocks. A little bit more on that later. Tess Darby with 12 points. She was 4 of 6 on threes. Her last 3 games, she's 9 of 16 on threes. Jordan Horston filled up the stat sheet, 9 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, 5 turnovers. And Tennessee had 21 assists to 16 turnovers. And Tennessee Tech had 12 assists to 15 turnovers. Rebounding, Tennessee was dominant, 53-27. And they outshot the opponent 48% to 29%. Tennessee was 5 of 15 on threes. Tennessee Tech 5 of 24. Tennessee was also only 3 of 7 on free throws. They have got to get better at that. So, as far as thought this was an interesting note. Tennessee has had one player record a double-double in each game this year. This time it was Tamari Key. Key has 186 career blocks. That's number 7 on Tennessee's list. And she's number 1 in Tennessee history in blocks per game at 4.0. Very impressive. Next up for the Lady Vols at Virginia Tech, 2 p.m. on Sunday. That'll be carried on the ACC Network. Rick Barnes and Olivier Kumwa were on the Zoom-only teleconference today. Rick Barnes said that he's proud of the way Kennedy Chandler bounced back after not playing or practicing that well before their game last week against Tennessee Tech. He performed extremely well. He had 7 steals, which tied a single-game record. And Barnes said that's what he needs to do at every game. Every practice, every game, he needs to be focused. I asked him, early in the year, you had the scrimmages, exhibition games, your first game, you shot at least 40 threes in every one of them. Since then, they've not shot more than 30 threes in a game. So I asked him if that's a number, 20 to 30. He said, not necessarily. It just depends on a variety of things. When they were jacking up a lot of those threes, John Fulkerson wasn't there. Now they're going more inside out. And so I just think that number seems to be the right number. But again, as Rick Barnes said, it depends on the situation, depends on the inside-out game, depends on the opponent and so forth. And he did say those first few opponents were packing it in, daring Tennessee to shoot threes, and so they unleashed in that regard. He said he's unsure when Josiah Jordan James will return. He said James has still been involved. He's still watching film, and he's still helping coach up players, but not playing yet. He said Juroš Plavšić needs to play in games the way he practices. He's been a really nice practice player, but in games he has not performed as well, and he needs to up on that. And then Jonas Adu, the inside big man, needs to practice better to get minutes on the court, according to Rick Barnes. And then that was it was interesting to hear Olivier Kumwa. He said that Adu is a load in practice. He said it's tough going against that guy. He's got great length. He's got very good timing, really good block shot ability. And so maybe as Jonas Adu continues to improve, we'll see more minutes out of him. Kumwa said that I asked him what impressed him the most about Kennedy Chandler. He said, well, the first thing I saw was speed. Speed and control speed. That's what stood out to him. He also mentioned that he's still trying to find his rhythm in terms of his – basically his scoring. He's been in and out in terms of that. He said he's looking forward to playing Colorado, but really looking forward to playing in Madison Square Garden. As Rick Barnes said, it's the mecca for college basketball. Kumwa said he's never played in Madison Square Garden, so he's really looking forward to that. He also said that Tennessee is still continuing to build chemistry. And then speaking of speed, he complimented Chandler, but he also complimented Zakiya Ziegler as well. So those are some notes from Tennessee men's basketball. College football ratings from CBS are out. Not a huge surprise with some of them. They got Georgia 1, followed by Michigan, Cincinnati, Alabama, Oklahoma State, Notre Dame. 7 is Ohio State, then Baylor, then Ole Miss at number 9. 14, Pitt, Tennessee's early season opponent. 24, Arkansas. 26, Kentucky. 28, Texas A&M. 34 is Mississippi State. Tennessee comes in at 39. Auburn is 46. LSU 53. Florida 64. South Carolina 66, Missouri 72, Vanderbilt 122. Two Tennessee opponents other than Pitt. You got Bowling Green at 113, and then South Alabama at 105. There is a commitment to Mississippi State who is decommitted, safety Jordan Thomas. Thomas has visited Tennessee for several weeks. He's coming in for an official visit this weekend. He also, after decommitting to Mississippi State, where he'd been committed for about 7 months, T is a main target for Tennessee. He's only rated a 3-star. He's 6'2", he's 190. And, ratings change, and he's not rated that high. He's rated the number 30 prospect in Alabama, the number 54 safety in the country. I'm also reminded that Cam Sutton was a 3-star as well, so you never know for sure. But Jordan Thomas decommitting to Mississippi State and looks very favorable for Tennessee to land him. All right, a few other notes out there. It was kind of interesting. It's amazing how people can exaggerate. So Scott Woodward, the athletic director at LSU, introduced Brian Kelly as the winningest coach in college football active. That's not true. There's a guy named Nick Saban who's got 268 wins. There's a guy named Mack Brown that's got 265 wins. Brian Kelly has 263. 13 years of those wins came when he was at Grand Valley State. So if you take Division I wins only, Brian Kelly is way down that list. But he does have a great record. He's 263, 97-2. Saban has won 80% of his games. Mack Brown's won 65% of his. Kelly's won 73%, but he is not the winningest coach in college football. All right, some college basketball notes. What a thriller last night. NC State defeating Nebraska 104-100 in four overtimes. Number 10 Arkansas, which is now 7-0 for the third year in a row. They beat Central Arkansas 97-60. Number 21 Auburn beat Central Florida 85-68. Walker Kessler, 17 points, 14 rebounds, 6 blocks. Now, when he was in the portal, Tennessee went after him. He had initially signed with North Carolina. They didn't land him. And then Jabari Smith, who was another Tennessee target, 20.7 rebounds and 3 steals. I can only wonder how good Tennessee would be if they had either one of those guys to help inside. Georgia, with a 2-5 record, they defeat Memphis, which is now 5-2, 82-79. Good win for Tom Crean. Oklahoma knocks off number 14 Florida, 74-67. That's the first loss for the Gators in their seventh game. North Carolina beats number 24 Michigan, 72-51. Michigan's worst ever loss when ranked versus an unranked opponent. And this is a concern. Washington has postponed its basketball game against number 11 Arizona due to virus concerns. So I'm afraid we're going to see some more of that out there, but that's one of the first postponements we've seen in basketball.
Yeah, Georgia State over the weekend canceled its game. I believe it was going to be Tennessee State. Georgia State had been shorthanded due to illness and contact tracing, had only had 7 scholarship players, 9 players total when it went to Rhode Island. And so Tuesday night it was, I think the game was scheduled to be last night, that it did not take place and would not be rescheduled.
The Women's Tennis Association has suspended all tournaments in China and Hong Kong. They cited Peng Shui and safety concerns for players or staff that might go there. So the WTA has taken a stance. Others have been too concerned, is the nice word, to take a stance against the human rights violations in China. The NBA continues to deal with China. Others continue to do it. The Winter Olympics are supposed to be in China. We'll see where that one goes. But the WTA is like, look, until there is proof that she is okay, we're not having any tournaments there. We're pulling out. I appreciate that statement. Good for them. Texas A&M defensive lineman DeMarvin Leal is entering the draft. Mel Kiper has him number 2 overall on his big board, the number 2 pick overall on the draft. College football playoff talks, well, they ended with no decision on expansion. They must decide in January if they want to expand the playoffs by 2024. If not, it's going to be later before they do that. I don't know all the hangups with it, but it appears it's going to go from 4 to 12 teams. We'll see what happens with that. And then Notre Dame said it's keeping offensive coordinator Tommy Reese. Brian Kelly wants him to go to LSU. Notre Dame restructuring Reese's contract at Notre Dame. What makes that interesting to me is they're basically telling whoever the new head coach is, your offensive coordinator is Tommy Reese. So, okay. Now, does that mean they're moving in the direction of hiring defensive coordinator Marcus Freeman, who worked with Reese?
I think a lot of signals point to that.
It makes you wonder if they're keeping Reese and making that kind of move with him. Okay, Alabama in the last 14 years has been an underdog 4 times. They're 4-0 when an underdog. All of those games they've won by double digits. They're a 6-point underdog to Georgia. I'm taking Georgia in spite of those numbers. We'll see what happens. And then in the NFL, so we've got a game tonight. The New Orleans Saints hosting the Dallas Cowboys. The Saints have lost 4 in a row. They've never lost 5 in a row under Sean Payton. Dallas has lost 3 of 4. They'll be without their head coach. 12 others have dealt with COVID protocols. It's unsure exactly how many players might be out, but Amari Cooper is said to be returning. He's off the COVID list. And in New Orleans, ESPN reported this morning, New Orleans might have 8 offensive starters out for this game.
Yes.
8. Wow. Taysom Hill is going to get the start. Now, he's been bothered by an ankle injury, which is one reason he hasn't replaced Trevor Siemian earlier. Hill was 3-1 as a replacement for Drew Brees last year. Siemian so far 0-4. Now, New Orleans is likely to have Mark Ingram, likely to be without Alvin Kamara. Saints ran for 44 yards on 25 carries against Buffalo. And there's some interesting numbers on Dallas. They started the year 6-1, averaging 32.1 points. In the last 4 games, they're 1-3. They're averaging 25.3 points. In the first 7 games, 455 yards per game. The last 4, 358. And the first 7 games, run defense allowed 88.3 yards. The last 4 games, they've allowed 140.5. That is a recipe for losing. And that's why they've only 1-3 in their last 4. But A big game tonight. I've heard people say this is a must-win for Dallas. I don't think it's a must-win. There are plenty more games for them to be able to win enough to get in the playoffs. I'd say it's a must-win for a 5-16. If the Saints want to get in the playoffs, they better win this one because they're reeling right now. So.
Yeah, and Dallas just hadn't been playing well.
Nope.
The good news is the Saints aren't an AFC West team, so I think Dallas's chances of winning go up exponentially because three of their four losses are to the AFC West. They do have a win over the Chargers, lost to the other three, and I just think that when you point to the advantage that Dallas has, and granted they are short, as you mentioned, a lot of staffers, but they get a lot of guys back on offense that they have been trying to play without, and if they don't beat this incredibly undermanned New Orleans team, I think it'll just be many, many, many more questions as to how you could lose to a team like this.
Yeah, and they have a significant advantage at quarterback, and I like Taysom Hill, but Dak Scott versus Taysom Hill, eh. That's a bit of an advantage for the Cowboys. So I would see Dallas winning, and I think it'll be a good game, a close game, but I think Dallas wins it. Yeah, we'll see. But those are news and notes brought to you by Image Matters.
I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. Today, it is the grand prize giveaway for the Bud Light New Year's in Nashville, and there's still some last chance qualifying going on. So come on out to Drake's, which is where we are, and that is right across Montview Road from, excuse me, Morrell Road, right across Morrell Road from Westtown Mall and in the Dean Hill Center. So you can come on out and get registered, and we'll have a couple more qualifiers before it's time to shut it down and then give away the grand prize in the last hour of today's show.
Florida's lost another player into the transfer portal. Four-star defensive lineman Lloyd Summerall has entered the portal. He did not make much of an impact, even though he was a four-star. Yesterday, Chris Bogle went into the portal. Bogle was a prime target for Tennessee a few years ago, and I just wonder if maybe he would have an interest in going to Tennessee. Tennessee could use all the help they can get. Bogle was known as a really good pass rusher. Not tremendously productive at Florida, but a pretty good player. 69 tackles, 12 tackles for loss, 8 sacks in his 3 years there. Tennessee could use all the help they can get. So can anybody with a pass rusher. He played primarily behind Brenton Cox. He's got 2 years of eligibility left. Bogle was the number 3 rated defensive end and the number 2 prospect coming out of Florida. Florida, by the way, in recruiting has only 11 commitments and they're ranked number 36 by the 247 composite rating. Also, Florida lost two others recently, a defensive lineman and an offensive tackle. So the Gators losing quite a bit. That doesn't mean that Billy Napier can't come in and change some minds, but right now they are departing. So leaving a gap with the Florida lineup. And also, as far as the Heisman Trophy, we saw that Yahoo Sports had their listing. They had Bryce Young number 1, C.J. Stroud number 2, Matt Corral number 3. I've talked to some people that are going to vote for Matt Corral number 1. Young led that drive late against Auburn, but up to that point he didn't play very well. Stroud didn't have that good of a game against Michigan. So I think it, to me, it's really a hard vote. Kenneth Walker at Michigan State about 3 weeks ago was one of my favorites, but he's kind of fallen off. And then Kenny Pickett at Pitt, among the nation's leaders in passing yards and touchdown passes. We saw him at Neyland Stadium this year. He's had a great year. I think he deserves some consideration. And if you're looking on defense, Will Anderson at Alabama is getting a lot of support. I think probably Davis at Georgia might be getting some. And then Michigan defensive end Aiden Hutchinson, who is one of the better pass rushers in the country. Those are probably the three best defensive players in the country in terms of getting some notice and maybe getting some support. So, but that's a look at the Yahoo Sports Heisman. John, it's going to be interesting. I've not narrowed it down. I'm going to wait to see what happens this weekend. Maybe somebody can sway me. Matt Corral can't because he's not playing.
Right.
But I want to see what Young and Corral do. And this weekend as well as Kenny Pickett before I make a determination on my Heisman ballot.
I'm going to do the same. I think the door was open wide for Corral to perhaps sneak in there based on what we saw last week. That would be the loss by Ohio State as well as the struggles of Alabama. And who knows? Young could still come away with it, as I do believe that that Tony Barnhart believes will be the case. But we shall see, because there will be the opportunity at least to consider many candidates.
There are 921 voters, and I think I saw there are 57 of those voters are former Heisman Trophy winners that are still with us. And
Do they all gather at that house to vote?
Yeah. I wish people would wait to the last minute to vote, and I am. And maybe you got a clear picture of who you want. I don't. But I usually wait to the last minute. I want to watch every game and count every game in terms of before I cast my ballot. But I just really don't know what I'm going to do. I think Young's going to be on it. I think Corral's going to be on it. Maybe Stroud. Maybe Pickett. Maybe Anderson. I don't know. I just hadn't narrowed it down. And look, we all know it's tough for a defensive-only guy to make it.
Yes.
And I think Anderson's probably had a greater impact than Davis. Not that Davis isn't a great player, not that he won't be a Pro Bowler, but Anderson has racked up a lot of sacks. He plays more downs. Davis doesn't play on third downs a lot unless it's third and short. So I think Anderson may have had a greater impact on his defense than Davis has had on his, even though Georgia's defense is better.
I've expanded my consideration to include a couple of long snappers and a holder.
Wow. That is expanding.
You know, none have ever won the Heisman Trophy before. Just trying to start a last-second campaign.
Good luck with that. I know one guy used to vote, and he said, I take my first two votes serious, and then I'm voting for a player from Alabama in the third spot. Really?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Not my philosophy, but anyway. Each his own.
No, I think the group that you highlighted right there, I do obviously believe that the winner will come from that rank, from that collection, and I do think that there are a number of guys that you can make a significant argument for. But it will be interesting to see exactly who shows up on what ballots and in what place.
One guy that's not on here that I hadn't talked about, and he's a tremendous running back, Breece Hall at Iowa State. Scored a touchdown like 24 straight games, which is an NCAA record. He's had a great year, but he's at Iowa State.
Yeah.
And they don't have a great team.
No.
So he's got no chance.
And if they had come close, I mean, just in the same zip code, living up to expectations, maybe we might have heard more about him.
That's true.
It's Animal. With Jimmy Hyams, I'm John Wilkerson. Today we're at Drake's, and it's so easy to find right across Morrell Road from Westtown Mall. In fact, we're looking right at JCPenney and that side, the Cheesecake Factory. This is where, of course, you want to come and get registered for the last-second registration for the Bud Light New Year's in Nashville contest. We give away the grand prize tonight.
And, John, I charted all of those possessions for Tennessee in which they made a first down because we heard Alex Golish mention this a while back. I thought it'd be intriguing to follow it. When he said usually when Tennessee makes a first down in the drive, they get going and there are positive results. He wasn't kidding. So if you take the Vanderbilt game, Tennessee had 8 drives in which they made a first down, 5 touchdowns, a field goal, a fumble, that was Joe Milton late, and a punt. 106 possessions in which Tennessee made a first down this year, 54 touchdowns. That's a pretty darn good percentage. That's right at 52% of the time when they get a first down, they score a touchdown. 9 field goals. So 63 times they scored out of 106 possessions in which they got a first down. There were only 22 punts. 8 times they went for it on fourth down, didn't make it. 8 turnovers. 2 times the game ended. And 3 times there was a missed field goal. So that's the chart. 54 touchdowns out of 106 possessions in which they made a first down. 9 field goals on top of that. That's pretty darn good. Now, what I don't have is how to compare that to other teams in the country. I don't know. I can safely say it's better than what they did last year, Tennessee. So,
yeah.
I'm out on a limb.
Oh, goodness. It was amazing to see how quickly they exceeded the total points scored. Now, granted, last year was a 10-game season, but yeah. Just how quickly they had it was either game 6. It might have been game 6 that they – I think it was the South Carolina game that they exceeded the points scored for all of last year.
Yeah. It didn't take long.
No.
And the
bar wasn't set very high.
That's correct. That is true. And but the thing to me, and you might say, well, there's a 10-game SEC schedule last year, to which I'm going to say, so? Because this year against Missouri, they got 62. Against South Carolina, they got 45 points. Against Kentucky, they got 45 points. So they racked up points against SEC teams this year. So it didn't matter. And it wasn't like all of their points. My point is, not all of their points came against some of the weaker competition non-conference. That's not what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they got 45 against Vanderbilt. So they racked up a lot of points in SEC games. Against Bowling Green, which is a bad team, they only got 38. Now, they racked up 56 against Tennessee Tech. And then against South Alabama, they were 60. So there were two games where they blew out the non-conference opponents with a lot of points. But when you score at least 40 points against one, two, three, four SEC opponents, that's pretty good. So, and I think this offense will potentially get better next year. And I say potentially because I don't know if Hooker's coming back. I don't know what receivers are going to be lining up for Tennessee next year. I don't know all the offensive linemen that will be lining up for next year. So there's some unknowns there. But I just think with Heupel at the play calling controls, Hooker at the play running controls, Tennessee's offense next year could be every bit as good and perhaps even better. Georgia's defense won't be as good next year, I wouldn't think. So I can see Tennessee not only will they break the scoring record this year for points, they could break it again next year. I think they're a lot of fun. This game, college football has turned into a game of entertainment, right? And that offense is pretty darn entertaining. So I think there are a lot of positives to look forward to with Tennessee. And if Hooker doesn't come back, you wonder who the quarterback would be. Is it going to be Milton?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't show me anything that made me think he would be able to do it. But maybe it's somebody they get in the transfer portal. You just never know. So I'm pretty confident that Tennessee will get production from the quarterback position, whether Hooker returns or not. You'd love to see Hooker come back, but even if he doesn't, I still think that offense can be really good next year, John.
I think so as well. And that's why I also think it's going to be quite the attractive location, not only for those coming back, but also for those that are in the portal that have given themselves this opportunity to look.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll see what transpires with that, and I will be interested to see how many players leave Tennessee. There are a couple of others I've heard rumors about, but I'm also interested to see how Tennessee hits a portal. Because this past year, you could argue certainly that Tennessee lost more from the portal that they gained.
Yes,
I think that's going to be the reverse this year. I really do. I think they've got some folks in the portal that they're going to land that are going to be very influential. And they'll lose some of the portal that I don't think will be quite as impactful to lose as opposed to a year ago.
With Jimmy Hyams, I'm John Wilkerson. We are at Drake's, which is right across Morrell Road from Westtown Mall. And it's the site of today's grand prize giveaway in the Bud Light New Year's in Nashville contest. Let's say hello to Jim, who joins us. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Jim.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
You know, I've got a couple of miscellaneous Tennessee questions I wanted to see if I could squeeze in here. You know, I was looking at, in the history of Tennessee football, they've played a number of West Coast teams. In California, they've played Cal Berkeley, SoCal, UCLA. In Oregon, they've played Oregon. They played Oregon State. In Washington, they've played Washington State. John?
Yes.
Never played the Huskies.
No, sorely lacking, and there's no reason it shouldn't happen because both enjoy attending those games by boat, so the Ball Navy could enjoy sailgating in Seattle and vice versa.
And I mean, you're the perfect guy to run this by. Now, do you know, has there ever been any talk of getting Washington on the schedule?
On our show, yes.
Yes, that's been it.
I guess we got that covered, Jimmy.
and it shows how much power we have.
Well, a lot's been done, huh?
Yes.
We haven't made a formal request, though.
That's right. Yeah, it's not a formal request, just informal.
Yeah. Well, like you say, that would be a great trip for Vol fans to go out to Seattle and see that atmosphere because, like you say,
both teams
make the trip by boat. Here's a trivia question for
you.
I'll
say this quickly. Their histories are amazingly similar in terms of just the length of time they've been playing football, accomplishments, different things like that. I just think now, granted, I think Tennessee is the more accomplished program, but I just think that there are so many similarities between the two. Still, absolutely no reason that this hasn't happened.
Yeah, I wish it would. Tennessee has played one more team in California besides the three that I mentioned. And I actually went to the game, so it wasn't 1925, John. Do you guys happen to know? Do you know what that other school in California that Tennessee has played? And I don't think they even play football anymore.
Pacific.
That's a good guess, but it wasn't that one. It's one of the University of California at schools.
Well, they played Pacific.
Oh, they have?
Yeah, that's Chuck
Webb got hurt in that game.
Oh, was that it? Okay. I got another one for you. Santa Barbara. That's okay. I didn't realize they had played Pacific. I forgot about that one.
1990.
Yeah. That was the opening game, wasn't it?
It was the second game. The opening game was Colorado in Anaheim.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And fun fact, in baseball, Chase Headley came from Pacific to the University of Tennessee.
Well, Walt Harris was the head coach at Pacific.
Here, I'm going to make you this promise. That's the last trivia question I'm ever going to ask you.
Hey, I don't like to admit this, but I've stubbed my toe on a couple of trivia questions through the years. I guess if
finally,
you do five a week for 23 years, you're going to miss one or two or three.
The term VFL, we hear VFL a lot. It goes back, I think, to the, Dooley era. Is there a definition for VFL? Is it just a loose kind of term? We use it a lot, but is there any kind of criteria to do it? We got players coming and going all over the place, so I didn't know if there was any definition to it.
I would think that there are some that are more befitting the name than others. For instance, I think just about anybody who's played at the University of Tennessee can claim to be a VFL, because not everybody who makes the decision to go somewhere else made that decision on their own. And I would think that if somebody opts to go somewhere else, then you have the VFL, okay, it's just whether or not they prefer to go by that or not. So I don't think there's anything that is in terms of a hard and fast criteria. And, Jimmy, I think that it can apply to students who worked with the program or players, obviously, both Vols and Lady Vols, and then coaches, assistant coaches. I think it is very broad-based in who can say, I think, proudly that they are VFL.
Yeah, and some VFLs have been better ambassadors of the program than others. So, yeah. And I don't know that there was a set definition. I thought it was just something that Dooley came up with. It was kind of neat that said, hey, once a Vol, always a Vol, that type thing. But once a Lady Vol, always a Lady Vol too. So I think that's kind of where that came from. And I think that's a nice gesture to those that have been in the program. But, again, some have been more deserving of that label perhaps, or better ambassadors than some others.
Well, that's probably the only good thing that came out of the Dooley era.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Well Jimmy, I'll tell you.
Changes.
Yeah. Jimmy ain't going to be writing any sports fix at six questions for you, that's for sure. So,
well,
you guys have
Barbara.
A good evening, okay?
Sure do appreciate it, Jim. Thank you very much. We'll get a break. We've got hour number two of Sports Talk, and up next, we look forward to being joined by Vol for Life, Austin Pope.
Look forward to it. Austin Pope, a local product, played at Tennessee for several years, had to sit out this year and retire from football due to injury, but we look forward to visiting with him.
That's next as hour number two of Sports Talk begins on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.